You all would mind silencing your cell phones, that would be helpful. It invariably is one of us that screws up here and lets it ring in the middle of the meeting, but if you all would help us out, that would be appreciated. If you all would stand for the our finance director, Wes Hamill is going to read the invocation. If you remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, we appreciate it.
Heavenly Father, as we begin 2018, we thank you for the challenges, opportunities that the city will face, and just ask that with your guidance, wisdom, and favor, we will do so in a manner that is pleasing in your sight. We ask for wisdom for every elected official, staff, public, participating in making Winter Park the best it can be. We ask these things in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Wes. Folks, we have a light agenda tonight so that we can all go home and watch the consolation game.
Agreed.
So let's try to work our way through this. Randy, do we have any changes on the agenda?
No, sir.
Okay, seeing that, we'll seek a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. I have a special opportunity here. So I have my predecessors with us this evening, and Mayor Bradley, number 53, was always fond of saying that Winter Park is not an island, it's an oasis. And even though as an oasis we are part of something bigger, we are part of a great region. We have to work with other local cities, other counties, in order to make this region the best it can be for future generations. We have been blessed to have individuals in our community that also recognize this and have spent more time in Winter Park and organizations that are outside our geographic borders to make this place so special. We have many of them that are here tonight. We also have some facts on UCF's inaugural team of 1979. Winter Park has had a long history with UCF. We have local talent QB Joe Luttinger. Did I get that right, Michael? Gene Lescalette, Joe Workman, Bill Ray, and Michael O'Shaughnessy, who's inducted into the UCF Athletics Hall of Fame and who his wife is always happy to remind me is the oldest living University of Central Florida football player. Two of the 10 individuals that really helped secure land in the late 60s, which would become UCF, were from Winter Park, Charlie Clayton and Bob Langford. It is a great honor to welcome our hometown University of UCF here this evening. Before I introduce and ask our special guest to get to the podium, I wanted to take a few moments just to recognize some of the other folks that are with us here tonight. We have Fred Kittinger, who's with UCF and is a very familiar face around here, as well as all of Central Florida, and Maritza Martinez, too, so thank you both for joining. We have David and your wife, Judy Albertson, who have always been such great contributors to this community and UCF, so thank you for being here, David. We have John Lord, also, I can't say enough about that as well, John, the things you've done for this community, and Rick Walsh next to him. Rick, thank you for everything you've done for this community, and of course, my predecessor, who is probably enjoying his retirement from this dais, as well as congratulations from your real job, Ken. And we have number 44, Michael O'Shaughnessy, part of that original team. Those are just a few of our friends and residents that are here, but there's others that couldn't make it today. Tony and Sonia Nicholson, I talked to Tony, and he was on a boat in Costa Rica, said he wanted to be here. He couldn't, but to wish everybody well. And Mickey Grindstaff's in Miami, so he couldn't be here today, but he wanted to let you know he's thinking about you guys today. So I'm going to ask, most of you may know this gentleman as the athletic director of UCF. We like to call him a neighbor and a resident of Winter Park. So Danny, if you wouldn't mind joining us, I have a little proclamation I'd like to read for you. Folks, it is UCF Knights Day in the city of Winter Park. Whereas the University of Central Florida, the UCF Knights football team led by head coach Scott Frost and team's captains Shaquem Griffin, Mackenzie Milton, Jamius Pittman, and Traquan Smith were undefeated in their 13-0 2017 perfect season. Whereas the Knights topped off their undefeated season with a 34-27 win over the Auburn Tigers in front of a sold-out crowd at the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta on January 1st, 2018. And whereas UCF was the only team in the nation, to go undefeated in the 2017 season after having an 0-12 season just 2 years ago, and turning things around under the direction of Vice President and Director of Athletics, Mr. Danny White. UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton was named Offensive Most Valuable Player with 245 passing yards, two touchdown passes, and one rushing touchdown. And where Shaquem Griffin was named Most Valuable Defensive Player with 12 tackles and one sack. And whereas the Knights celebrated their perfect season with a parade down Main Street at the Walt Disney World Magic Kingdom Park on Sunday, January 7th, and a block party just a little bit earlier today?
Later
today on Church Street Station in downtown Orlando. Whereas the City of Winter Park congratulates our hometown university football team and organization, as well as the UCF president, students, and alumni in this recognition, now therefore I, Steve Leary, by virtue of the authority vested in me as a mayor of City of Winter Park in the great state of Florida, do hereby proclaim Monday, January 8th, 2018, as UCF Knights Day in Winter Park, Florida, and encourage all residents to join in congratulating the Knights on an amazing season and awesome win at the Peach Bowl. Danny. So before I turn the microphone over to Danny, just a few more words. 0-12 to 13-0 in just 2 years. Coaching change before the bowl game. Staff leaving. Bonuses paid out. You guys showed a tremendous amount of class. Something that the entire region is proud. The entire region is getting kudos for the actions that you all took and the manner in which you did it. So thank you. I will tell you that from one of the top 10 nine-hole golf courses in the country, we have a nice golf hat for you.
There we go. Thank you.
We have a nice golf hat for you. And also from the number one most beautiful campus in all of college, we have the Rollins. They asked you to let you know their thanks and their appreciation for everything you guys have done, because we are one greater community. So thank you for everything from all of our partners in the City of Winter Park. And I'll certainly like to turn over the microphone to you, Dan.
Thank you. Well, in the interest of making it one of the best nine-hole courses, I'll stay off it. I'm a terrible golfer.
That's all right.
Thanks so much, Mayor Leary, commissioners, for this wonderful honor. I find myself for the last really few weeks in a position where I'm accepting recognition and awards on behalf of other people. So it's certainly about our student athletes, what they accomplished for the last couple of years. Scott Frost and his staff, so proud of what they did. And this season, to overcome a heck of a lot of adversity, obviously, as we all know, the hurricane that came through and upset our community that caused us to really reschedule our football season in the middle of the season, which is unprecedented. Our kids lost their bye week, which is a big deal in football. And to go undefeated and run the table amidst all the distractions of hurricane and then the coaching change, it's just phenomenal. So really proud of our mature group of student athletes and honored for today. So thank you so much. This one, it hits closer to home for me, being a Winter Park resident. So we're really proud and grateful for the recognition.
Thank you. Can we get some pictures, if you don't mind?
Yeah.
I will tell you, too, that you think 13-0 is challenging. Try to get a variance in the City of Winter Park.
I'm learning about that.
Would you all come up here and get the trustee, the former trustee, the Michael, come on up, please? You get a picture?
Danny, I had a couple questions. I thought they had four teams, so that teams like UCF would be in the four teams, and there would be no question. And then second is, now that they've done this, shouldn't they have co-national champions?
Yeah.
We're playing the last
championship. Man, I think it was brilliant. I love it.
It's so exciting.
I don't know if they could take Lehigh.
Can you remember the show?
Okay, is everyone ready? 1, 2, 3, and again. 1, 2, 3, and one more.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye, Rick. See you later. Good job.
Congratulations. That's cool.
Bye, dear. See you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I got a cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got
to
keep the same role.
You do.
Yeah,
I
got a cold, but
congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everything's going to be a letdown after that.
I don't know what that is, some kind of an African gazelle or something.
It's like the horns are coming out of your
head. No, it's one of our constituents.
Oh, Carol, good shot.
I'm a little fatter than that.
Okay. Dory, for Winter in the Park, I'm going to turn this over to you, if you don't mind, the holiday contest.
You know, years ago, someone first told me, never follow kids or animals, and now never follow winning football teams onto the podium. But we have a 7-0 record for our holiday windows, so we're doing pretty well. So there we go.
Seeing a theme today.
We're here to, you know, it took me all of about 3 minutes to work through that little spiel. Whoops. So we have two award winners tonight that we're very happy to recognize. In the Design Excellence Award, this year we gave that to Taylor's Pharmacy. The Design Excellence Award was a panel award. It was done by our CRA advisory board. They receive a $500 credit for their electric through our electric utility as our partner in this. And I do know Taylor's is not here tonight to receive this award, but we will make sure that they get it. The second award, and we do have Heather with Beyond Park here. She's still here? Heather, come on up. Heather and Beyond Park are our People's Choice Award. And that was an award that we were able to do through cell phone voting and through multiple votes. They are our People's Choice Award this year. So thank you very much. And they received a $250 credit from our electric utility. And this lovely, and this, I always get word, you know, me and glass is just nerve-wracking. But a lovely little award that says that they were our award winners. So congratulations. Let me put this back before anything happens to it. So thank you all for participating.
Yeah.
We're very happy to continue to do this. And we have great support from so many of the merchants on Park Avenue and so many of our visitors coming downtown to help vote on these.
Yeah, I think you probably saw many of the people in this audience through Beyond Park over the holidays. So great, great store, great opportunity to help the community. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you all very, very much.
Thank you. Let's make sure the landlord passes on that credit that to the tenant, please.
I think the tenant actually gets the credit.
Okay, let's just make sure. Mr. City Manager.
Just Happy New Year. I have no report. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for the city manager? Okay, seeing none, Mr. Arnold, city attorney.
Just two items, Mayor, Commissioners. With respect to the Constitutional Revision Commission meeting that was supposed to happen last month on the Home Rule amendments, two committees were to hear it, legislative and local government. It's been postponed, so either on the 18th or 19th, the local government committee will hear the Home Rule amendments. Also, we've been joined, or the committee has been joined with another amendment from the League of Counties, I believe, to have a similar amendment to the Constitution move forward if these committees approve it for protecting and enhancing county home rule power. So that, if there's some needed action, I'll let you know. Secondly, I will be bringing back to the commission the ordinance I mentioned to you with respect to the naming policy in ordinance form at the next meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions for the city attorney?
Just a quick one. It's two committees.
Yes.
Bad, normal. What is two committees?
Legislative is tough because effectively you're asking the folks that are making recommendations to amend the Constitution that are part of the legislature to take away or make it tougher for the legislature to pass statutes that would affect cities and counties. So that's a tough one. But the first committee to hear it will be the local government committee, and it's probably will be a little tight from what I understand. So some helpful words from commissioners around the state and mayors would be very helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Kirk.
Yes, and sir. They open tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you.
It's different. Legislature.
Excellent. Okay. Any other questions for the city attorney? Mr. Arden, thank you. Mr. Knight? Sorry, yes. I'm struggling with this setup again on my computer, so I'm assuming you're taking this.
Yes. In your packet, at the request from the last commission meeting, you have the administrative policies that were adopted by the City Commission back in 2011, along with the investment policy and debt management policies, which were adopted in 2000 and 2004, respectively. This was requested to come back just to kind of talk about whether they were necessary or should I say, in some cases, stating the obvious, I think is what Commissioner Weldon said. So I put them in here without commentary, but much of the operating policy really is just a compilation of best practices in these areas. It's things that staff would do, whether or not they're written down in a policy. It starts out, saying I'm going to provide you with a balanced budget. Well, the charter requires that, obviously, so the policy is, somewhat redundant in that regard. The debt policy and the investment policy are really required, by the rating agencies. They don't have any authority over us, but we have those really in place so that they're satisfied when they come in and review. But I'd be glad to answer any questions about these policies, and I'm open to any suggestions the commission has if there's any of these that you'd like to see changed. So,
questions for the city manager. Mr. Seidel? Anything off those? I'm just going to go down the line if you'd like to.
No, sir.
Yeah. Randy, is there anything in here that would preclude us from having a dedicated funding source for transportation management funds?
No, there is not. In fact, the revenue policy would, speaks to, looking for other revenue sources and that type of thing, so it would fit right within the policy.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Cooper?
I actually didn't ask to have these brought back, no. So I'd kind of like to hear from the person that did. Mm-hmm. I have lots of ideas about the debt policy, but we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure why, what our objective is today, so I'd like to hear first.
Sure.
Because I know we've got something on your mind.
Well, it was just I went through all this when it occurred to me that these policies existed, number one, and they were formed by a commission 10 years ago or so of their own volition. And I went through them and I compared some of them to the charter, and it's redundant. We already know that, certainly these things have to be done. And I then read over the investment policy and the debt policy, which I both support wholeheartedly as they are. But a lot of the language above in this administrative policy document is a restatement with different words, which can be interpreted as having different interpretations of the same things that are already in the investment policy and the debt policy. And it just occurred to me, in the interest of keeping things clean, my recommendation is to ask Randy to go through the administrative policy and pick out those things that are duplicative or irrelevant or obvious, and try to narrow down those policies in the administrative policy document that he finds to be number one, meaningful and worth preserving in a formal document.
I personally don't have a problem with that, as long as we end up with good solid policies. I prefer not to have conflicting policies. There was a question that I had,
sure,
about the debt policy. We track our debt as a percentage of assessed property value. Mm-hmm. And I think, given the fact that we have so many properties that are not taxed or receive, mm-hmm, tax credits, another way that the Government Financial Office Association talks about tracking that debt is by a percentage of general fund revenue. So I would love at some point to have that discussion of how we selected assessed value as opposed to the actual revenue. It doesn't have to be now, but that's just something that's been on my mind.
Could do both easily.
Yeah, and I'm not sure either is really relevant to a policy decision, because
it's in the policy, I think.
Right, but the financing agencies and sources are going to require certain percentages and ratios, regardless of what we put in the policy, in terms of actually getting some debt if we choose to, borrow money.
I think it's healthy to have good policies.
Yeah. I think it is. I'm just trying to keep them.
I don't want to do away with them, but it's redundant or create conflict, then absolutely.
Well, so if you have another two nods, or it sounds like you're insistent on the request to have city manager look for redundancies and come back to us.
And maybe we can move some of the things into the existing.
Yeah, you can move.
I don't mind shortening it up. There's a lot of policies that didn't seem to be.
I also don't think we need to be fixing a problem that doesn't exist. So only deal with something that is an issue, because if it hasn't been an issue, I don't think we need to just fix it to fix it.
Well, I think you're right on that score. But the point I made last meeting on this when I brought it up was that there's a specific policy in here that says that we're obligated, so long as we support this policy, to maintain or to allocate a certain percentage of general fund revenues to reserves each year, and we didn't do that. And I'm not complaining that we didn't do that.
Isn't it just stated as a goal, though?
No, I don't think so.
That is the problem, because that is the way we've understood it, is a goal, but it is written differently.
No, it's not the 30%. It's the 0.5% right. of the general fund balance has to, right. you know, it says has to be specified, and I have no problem in the long run that, you know, while my wishes were different, it doesn't bother me that they weren't agreed to by the rest of the commission. It was just when I saw it in a policy, that's when I started asking questions about, well, where does policy come from and why does it exist and do we really care? And if we're going to care, should these be reviewed every time there's a new member of the commission and see if there are three votes to reestablish them, because they become the fundamental policies that this board is responsible for enacting and for protecting.
So Peter, what would you like the city manager to do? Because we can this and get you three nods or not three nods.
Yeah, well, I think I already stated it. I'd like to, you know, have Randy go through it with staff and look at the administrative policies and see if there's anything in there that they think is redundant, superfluous, is already covered by the charter.
Or a conflict, or that might
be better stated in the existing investment and debt policy, so that we can just clean it up.
So everything's in the same bucket.
Yeah, I can support that.
No problem.
Can we have a third?
Sure.
Okay, we have three. Yeah. Randy, would you please do that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I have a quick question on this. Just like under the reserve policy, number four, Randy, is that something about 10% of the annual increase in general fund balance? Is that
for the parks fund?
Is that something we've been actively doing then?
Yes.
Okay.
And now, when the fund balance goes down,
right.
we have a threshold that we have to get back to before we do that again.
Okay.
And so when the fund balance was drawn down a couple of years ago, it's taken us a while to get back up to where we were.
Okay.
But in the years where it has increased, yes, before that we've done that. Yes, sir.
And the Auditor General's website that puts up all the indices and comparisons for the municipalities, that's something that we never actually have an opportunity to discuss.
The auditor usually reviews that with the commission when they do their presentation.
So he's the right person to talk to.
Right, but I mean, we do that analysis. So that's,
well, I'm sitting down with Russ, but I just thought it's a commission. It was a couple of years before I was really aware that existed, and it's interesting.
I don't agree with it either, but it's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It creates thought. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have some action on that.
Yes, sir.
Randy, Peter, do you have a specific time you'd like to see that back, or are you just kind of giving a little flexibility on it?
It's not time sensitive.
Great. Okay, folks, we'll take the comments from the citizens at closer to 5 o'clock. We're looking at the consent agenda.
I'd like to move it.
Okay.
I'll second.
What are we on, Mr. Mayor?
We're on the consent agenda. Okay. We'll open up the floor to public.
Is that the minutes with the addition? Okay. With the addition that Cindy sent us out showing the reference back to that meeting. I can pull that then for a comment if that's necessary.
Commissioner Sprinkle made the motion, so I will ask her. Does that include the amendment?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Oh, thank
you. Commissioner Seidel, is that your understanding as well?
Yes, I read the amendment.
Okay, thank great. You. So that is. Perfect. Okay, we'll open the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on item 9? Now is your time. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Number 10, state legislative priorities. Randy.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. These were sent out to the commission a couple of weeks ago, and I got some feedback from commissioners and department heads. So what you have in your packet is slightly revised from that. But these will go to our lobbyists. They've already had the draft that they've been working with, but these will go formally to our lobbyists upon the City Commission's approval.
May I ask?
Commissioner Sprinkle, please.
Can we actually put a little teeth in those and make a statement about them other than just, it sounds like I'm reading the title of something. And I want it to state what it is we want from them. And so when it comes to the first one, I understand that what we're looking for. I just think it's a little bit nebulous now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice thing to think about, but is there something we want and be as specific as we can in doing that?
Sure.
Okay.
In fact, don't Randy, you do that?
I do that with the lobbyists, but yes, absolutely.
But every one of us, I'm sure you're in the same situation, every one of us is in front of a legislature
right.
at some point in time. So it makes sense for us to have talking points so that we're consistently representing your story so that we have a better chance of success.
Okay.
So I really do like the idea of talking points for at least the first...
At least the first 3 to 5.
Right. We're not going to... I know that this list is not going to be totally dealt with, but if we could do the top ones that we know are going to be hot items like the CRAs...
Sure.
Or... And then my question is, what do we do about federal legislative priorities? We used to have a list of those. We're paying a consultant every year. And my question is, if we don't have priorities and we're not hearing from the consultant, are there changes that need to be made?
I can provide you that at the next meeting if you'd like.
Yes.
Can you send it along?
Sure.
I'll put it on the agenda. Mr. Sagan?
DC has enough issues right now. They don't need us.
Anything more for the city manager on these? Randy, do you want to go up to legislative days or anything? I mean, we can go up to the, I spoke to the president of the Florida League of Mayors the other day. He was going to go up with a busload of people. And I'm not sure. I'm not going to sit in a room with 30 mayors all yelling for their own thing. I'll speak to who we need to speak with individually, but I'm not, I don't know they're going up. Okay. Commissioner, are you going up?
I'm going up the next week with the Tri-County Advocacy team. It's kind of smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
Kathy Till's running that now. Okay. She does a nice job.
Okay, good. Okay, then at least I'll hear from both parties on it. Great.
And that's why I wanted to make sure that our talking points are all the same.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
Well, the other thing about that is those talking points don't do anything, guys, unless you actually get them turned into something called a bill. Yeah. So I think that if we really want something there, we need to say what it is we want, and we need to draft it, and we need it to go forward. So that's all.
Well, we do have our lobbyists working with the other lobbyists up there trying to draft language for some of those bills. So they're working on it.
Yeah, they've done a pretty good job with the local bills that we've had to do.
It's been a challenge, as you all know, and it's been written up all over the state.
Well, local bills are done. I mean, they're already gone up, most of them. So.
Okay. Next item. Apologize.
Winter Park Art.
Yeah. Who do we have with this? Is this Randy?
No,
this Kyle.
Is
Kyle?
Oh, there's
Jan. Who's it? There's Jan.
Who's
taking this on from a staff perspective?
Lindsay Nason.
You're just throwing Jan to the wolves?
No, nobody can handle this better than Jan.
Gosh. Jan, they bailed pretty quickly on you.
No, we didn't bail on them. They had already teed this up. But anyway, we are going to allow some members of our Public Arts Advisory Council to share with you our latest art in the park idea, and I think that they probably represent it even better than staff can, so we're going to let them present today.
Well, it's Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Jan Clanton. I'm the member of the Public Art Advisory Board, but the liaison to the Subcommittee on Art and Culture, and this is Lauren Branzi, who is the chair of the Public Art Board. And we are here to seek your approval for a proposal we have to do an Art on the Green exhibition in celebration of the initiative that Dory and the city have supported us on to make this truly a city of art and culture with a weekend for the arts. And we do, you have the proposal, but we do have one alteration to that. We are going to move the sculpture that was originally planned for the corner of Denning and Morris Boulevard to another location. This is an exhibition that came our way, and it was a real treat to have some large-scale sculpture that might present almost a new gateway to Winter Park. We are positioning it on the medians down Morris Boulevard, hoping to lead everybody from 1792 to the city. It also frees up Central Park from having so many exciting programs there and needing the grass to rest. So this gives us a wonderful opportunity, and we're hoping that you will support this proposal for us.
Great, thank you. Questions?
Move to approve.
I'll second.
I did have one question.
Certainly.
Where was your first piece going to be on Morris? Were you going to move closer to 1792 then?
When we went through this, we had somebody from Parks and Rec and from the city. As far as I can tell, the medians, and Lauren was there too, are too narrow as we get closer to 1792. So I think what we will do is the one that had been selected for that position was large and was extremely colorful. So we may move it to the first median away from that intersection.
Right. Okay, great.
And then bump something else, because it really is kind of like a, you know, explosion of confetti right there. It makes it look like it's an exciting place to visit.
Okay, great. Great. That's it.
Okay. Any other questions? This is within the budget, I'm assuming.
Me too.
Yes.
Yes. It is.
Yes. It is.
Just a little question.
The chairman of finance.
Okay, great. So we have a motion. We have a second. Let's open the floor to public comment. Any wish to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Wobbin?
Yes.
Mayor Liggett?
Yes. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Lauren. Yes. Thank you, Jim. Okay, our procurement policy. This is on second reading, Mr. Knight. Actually, Mr. Vardaman.
Yes, sir. Ordinance number blank, an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Section 2-188 of the City Code governing purchasing contracts and other matters, providing for, without limitation, signature authority, procedures and policies, and adoption thereof, procurement policy, city manager authority, mayor authority, encroachment upon city drainage or utility easements, execution of easement and license agreements, execution of documents and other matters not involving expenditure of city funds, matters related to city property, and other matters related to the foregoing, provided for codification, severability, conflicts, and an effective date.
Okay. What say you, Commission?
I'll move it. Second.
Thank you. Okay. Any further discussion? This is on second reading, folks.
I did have a conversation with Randy this morning about some of the details, and my issues were addressed. There are some minor administrative issues Randy might want to take up with Kurt.
Well, this is on second
reading. I'd actually love to hear, Pete, if you don't mind, only because I had a few myself. If they're the same ones, maybe we could talk
about them. Well, it was purely minutiae that dealt with the use of the language deputy mayor and some other stuff that isn't worth talking about up here.
Okay. Yeah, so deputy mayor should say vice mayor.
And the question
was, does it even need to be there, because the charter already says that the vice mayor can do anything in the mayor's absence. Yeah. So.
You know, I went through some of the changes that were underlined, and I came to understand why the language is what it is, and I agree with it.
Okay. And I talked with Kurt and was satisfied. There's one last question. The year maximum that we're striking out, does that apply just to the city manager, or does it also apply to the purchasing manager?
Yeah, we have not been able to review the purchasing policy yet.
Okay.
But the question's a good one. Does the same limitation, does the one-year limitation still continue to apply to the designee or the assistancy measure?
If it's over a year, does it come to you instead of the person?
If it's over a year, it has to come to the commission.
That will be struck out.
But now it's being changed to give you authority for up to 5 years.
Yeah.
So whilst
I just wanted to make sure that's right. You are not the person directing. So that's kind of my question for you. If you're going to interpret that as meaning that you get anything over a year, I'm good to go. Okay. Thank you.
So we make that assumption within that language?
Which paragraph is that?
And if the assumption doesn't match the language,
we can bring it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So bottom line, the 1 year would still continue to apply under the purchasing manual to everybody except Randy.
Right. Got it. And I'll make sure that the maker of the motion is Commissioner Sprinkle, and you're okay with that?
Yes, sir.
And the seconder is Commissioner Cooper?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, let's open up the floor to public comment. They wish to address the commission on this item. Now is your time. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. City, please read the roll.
Commissioner Sundell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Wallace?
Yes.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Pete, you scared me a little bit with that deputization because, you know, made me think about giving you a weapon of some sort.
It's a scary prospect.
Mr. Artie.
Yes, sir. Ordinance number blank, an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Article Roman Numeral 2, Chapter 22 of the City of Winter Park Code of Ordinances relating to the Building Code and amending Article Roman Numeral 5, Chapter 22 of the Winter Park Code of Ordinances relating to property and building maintenance, providing for the incorporation of and modifications to the Florida Building Code and associated standards and requirements, providing for clarifications to the City's Building Code and Property and Building Maintenance Code, providing for the incorporation of certain administrative and technical amendments, including a fire sprinkler requirement for certain properties, designating applicable wind design criteria, providing for severability, codification, conflicts, transmittal to the Florida Building Commission, and an effective date.
Mr. Wiggins.
Good afternoon. This is part of a 3-year update to the Florida Building Code, and this is required by local governments to enforce the Florida Building Code, and we adopt local administrative and technical amendments, a few technical amendments to the Florida Building Code. We've put on the table here just a few of the codes that we enforce that are current and now in effect as of beginning of this year. But first, before I get into any other details, I wanted to introduce and let the chairman of our construction board, Rodney Kincaid, who's served with us many, many years, and introduce him, and he has a few comments for you.
Certainly. Mr. Kincaid, welcome. Thank you. I know
every
year when I appoint people, I look at the
Thank you, George, and Mayor Larry, Larry, and the board. We met on December the 1st to primarily discuss this new ordinance that we had to accomplish in order to comply with the state's requirements. It was simply updating what we've had for many, many years. We had an extended discussion about it. George had written 38 pages of corrections, and we very carefully talked about it, not to offend him, because frankly, he had done a marvelous job, made our job very, very easy. So I'm here today to back up what the board did, what action it took. It was a unanimous vote in favor of adopting this new ordinance. And with that, I don't have much else to offer you, and I'm sure you're glad of that so you can get out of here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kincaid.
Thank you.
I actually have questions. Are they for Mr. Kincaid or for George?
George.
George, what I'll do is, I know you probably don't want to get into the minutiae of the ordinance. I'd just like to point a few highlights that are in the ordinance and answer questions. This document is put together in conjunction with the Florida Building Code. It updates various references in the code. It's also put together in conjunction with a state building official association administrative code that is updated and detailed for local governments to utilize the resources. So there are some provisions out of this that are incorporated into our administrative amendments, and as well as any other needs that we have come across in the last 3 years to do further tweaking or changes or updates to our code. Mr. Kincaid said 38 pages, but it really is going back and carrying over most of the administrative amendments that we've had for years and years.
So it reads like 37, right, George?
Yeah, that's right. So some of the things I wanted to point out is that We also update the property maintenance code. We utilize the International Property Maintenance Code, and we're cited, we're updating that to the 2018 edition, along with our local amendments. One correction in the ordinance that I came across actually today, just a number correction for the for record. On page 3 of the ordinance, which is page 85 of the agenda packet, the reference under 104.6, under determination of substantially improved or substantially damaged existing buildings and structures in flood hazard areas, that number accurately should be 104.2.1. So that in the changes in the code, that's, I just wanted to point that out. Other items, again, I've listed them page by page, and items that you've seen there. We've added a provision to strengthen the penalty for leaving a residential construction project unfinished, which we see from time to time in our residential neighborhoods where there's a lot of infill construction going on.
So, George, would you mind if I stop you here and see if there's any questions from the commission first?
Sure.
What I'll do is if they haven't addressed areas that you think we need to be extra aware of, maybe perhaps you can address those. But why don't I open up to the commission first? I'll start with Commissioner Seidel, if you don't mind.
I'm good.
No? Commissioner Sprinkle?
I have three.
Certainly.
Okay. First of all, when I read the new requirements for the pool inspections, okay, those are the same inspections that were there in the past. You just changed the language of what you were looking for. Is that accurate to say?
We changed those to be in line with the inspection requirements that are in the residential building.
But there were like 5 inspections to build a pool, and there's still 5 inspections.
Correct.
To build a pool. Okay,
correct.
That was one of my questions. I just wanted to make sure. My second question is, when I was looking at it, do we have a time of construction in there from 8 in the morning until 5? And it mentioned and holidays, that they can't construct on holidays. Is that right? I would just think you should clarify holidays, because holidays mean a lot different things to different people. Maybe you say federal holidays, because you're going to have somebody who constructs on holidays. But am I not right? Doesn't it say and holidays now?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
And then I want you to know that I was driving home from working out this morning at 7:15, and all of the people that we hire to go out and do undergrounding are out there at 7:15. So if we're going to require people to wait to construct till 8 o'clock, we need to follow those rules. And everybody, I just want you to know that it is very evident when I'm out at 7:30. Am I right? Isn't there something about the time at 8 o'clock?
It says 8 to 5.
Let me clarify something. That only deals with the demolition of buildings.
Okay.
Where
okay.
Somebody has decided to demolish the building, they've posted it, they've gone to get utilities disconnected, and we've put in... And sometimes a person they'll start plans for a house, and they'll have it posted, they'll put the silt fence up, they'll vacate the building, and it'll be just left as a nuisance in the neighborhood. And that provision you're talking about only addresses those type of buildings that are left unattended and vacant.
It's a shame it doesn't address all construction.
Okay, so what you're saying is those are 8 to 5?
Demolition, right.
Only, so there's no other time frames for 8 to 5 for construction?
The other time frame is in a project that goes on beyond the allowable time limit, like it goes on for over a year,
right,
and they're dragging their feet, and it's creating a nuisance in the neighborhood, and their permit expires,
right,
or they want to get reinstatement. We have provisions in there that can limit the time period that... for that project, because it's been going on for so long that it's a,
I'm just talking about noise here from 8 to 5.
Right.
That's all. I'm not dealing with that
normal,
kind of time.
Normal time,
yeah,
is
normal
7,
time is 7.
7 till 9.
That's what I thought. And so that's what's still there.
Changing.
All right. Great. I'm sorry to throw a kink in it. I guess when I saw that, I was wondering.
Right.
My last question is, It says in there that if you've pulled a permit, this is what I think I read, if you pull a permit and then maybe you decide not to do anything with it, so you pulled a permit to put up a fence, say, and then you decide not to put up a fence, it, you're responsible for closing out that permit? Is that correct?
That's correct.
And is there a process for that, and do the people who do that know it? Because I just have heard that there's people that have gotten permits and then never done anything. Is that the way it works? I'm sorry that I don't know that.
We're adding a provision, again, that's in the model code for the state that makes it responsibility of the permit holder to close out their permit, to call the inspections, or to notify us if they're not going to proceed with the project that the permit can be closed out. There's also a piece of legislation in the legislature.
Well, before you go there, so do they know that when they pull the permit that they have to close it out?
Yeah, they know that they have to call for inspections and get a final inspection approval and, in most cases, a CO.
Yeah, it expires after 12 months, doesn't it? If they don't reactivate it, it expires after 12 months?
For one- and two-family dwellings, there's a one-year time limit to complete it.
But like for a fence, is that a one-year time limit also?
Well, it would anything from what anything having to do with a one- and two-family dwelling or accessory structure within that, yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that people knew that they had to do that, that's all, because that's not what I had heard from somebody. You know how that works.
Right.
Well, there's a challenge, and George, you and I had a quick conversation about this not too long ago, that the state's dealing with, and they're dealing with it on a state level, is that a lot of permits were left open, or not, I shouldn't say left open, they just weren't closed.
Right.
And property owners, when they were, whether they were the initial, they could have been tenants that pulled these permits, the property owners are now being handed these unclosed permits and were restricted from doing anything else on the property.
Right.
I know that's mostly commercial stuff, but it's still, it's a problem. There's the unopened or the unclosed permitting issue is kind of a problem across the street, and they're trying to address it a couple of different ways.
Okay, I just wasn't clear on it. Thank you.
That's exactly it. Correct.
Mr. Cooper?
That actually is on my list too, George, so I can start with that if you want to.
Okay.
On page, I think it's 88, on 10553, it says that closing out or resolving open or expired permits shall be the responsibility of the permit applicant and the property owner. And which part of that is new? Is the property owner new, or are, which part is being changed? It's all underlined as new. I just know that when I've done a lot of work at the house, and usually it's the contractor that comes and pulls the permits, and the contractor.
On your behalf as the owner.
Right, but the question is, in the past, who has been responsible for closing it out? It's kind of the same question.
Right. Typically the permit applicant, which is a licensed contractor, but it, ultimately if they abandon the job or never complete it, it falls to the property owner to either bring in another contractor or to take over the permit and, you know, complete the job and close out the permit.
Which sounds reasonable if it's something that they're aware of.
Right.
If it's something that they haven't been doing in the past, then it seems like we need some education.
Well, Commissioner, that is a change, George, because it's not just if a general contractor abandons a project or something, but if a general contractor finishes and doesn't close out the permit, that's where the challenge is. Because and if you don't need a CO, if there's already a CO, if it's just an addition to a house, or if it's a sign,
rewire,
or a commercial property, or rewire,
that happened to
that's me. The challenge. And so I think that's the question that the commissioner is asking.
Right.
If that is the question, if the contractor pulls a permit, leaves the house after the work is done but never closes the permit,
you shouldn't give them final payment.
Who's responsible for that permit closing out? Because if she goes to pull another permit 2 years from now and it gets flagged that there's an open permit, the contractor's long gone, and they didn't get an inspection because the property owner didn't know they had to get an inspection.
Right.
Where does that lie?
Well, ultimately it's with the property owner, because you won't be able to sell your property unless you close out all the open permits. And if the contractor is left or left it unfinished, then the property owner will either need to pull the permit themselves or find another licensed contractor to come in and complete it. Or if it is completed, to call in the final inspection and get it signed off.
So the question is that requirement coming from the state or is that a local requirement?
It's always been a requirement.
It's underlined.
It's ultimately.
So we're asking you to articulate it. They're asking municipalities to articulate it because that has been the big question.
Right. We're just trying to make it clear, really.
Okay. So if someone wants to make a motion about that, it's on page 88. That was just one of my questions.
The language is fine.
So George, let me ask you a quick question about that then. I mean, on our permit, should we not indicate it's the property owner's responsibility?
Yes.
Are we indicating that to have the permits closed out before, I would do it before you make final payment to your contractor, show me he closed out my permit.
It's just some education.
But if you had that information available when they come down to get the, when they're getting the permit, if you mail it to them with that sheet that provides them the advice, if you will.
Well, there's also, this is off base of the topic that I think we're here to vote on, but procedurally the city could, after a certain number of months or years that a permit hasn't been formally closed, have a policy, and maybe it's built into the permit fee, of sending the property owner a notice that says permit 1234 has never been closed, so forth and so on. But that's the problem, we actually do that.
We go through our records, we find permits that are over 6 months that are expired or open, and we send letters to the owner or to enter the contractor, the permit applicant, letting them know it needs to be closed
out. This language, I think, is just to give the city something to point to justify its efforts to close permits.
But the problem is, to Commissioner Seidel's point, I believe it's probably an opportunity for us to alert the probably unknowing property owner.
Get a process.
Ultimately, you are responsible.
I was suggesting that. He says we already do it.
That was one of my items. I have three more. That was number one that I thought was the most important. The second is on page 87, 105.4.18.
87.
Well, that's only because I wanted to start where we were. Let me get this real fast. It says that the building official may close expired or inactive permits after 10 years. And 10 years just seems extremely generous to me, and I'm wondering if that's a state requirement or if you want to do the 10 years. Is 10 years something
generous in which way?
It seems like a long time to keep a permit open to me.
This whole provision came about as a result of the real estate title company's issues with properties being failed to close because of old permits. And cities and counties around the state are finding there's thousands of open permits that are causing closings to not take place. There's a piece of legislation that has a Senate and a House sponsor that articulates this and tries to provide more conclusive solutions for this. This is part of that. And ahead of that legislation, our state association put together this provision that gives us locally in an administrative a method to handle that so that we come across there's permits that are 10, 15 years old and the roofing contractor never finaled the roof. So there's been no major hazard or experience over the past 10 or 15 years. It gives us authority and this clarifies it to close out older permits like that. So that's what this whole paragraph is about, is trying to deal with this future legislation that's in progress.
What does that say? Do they have, they're going to preempt whatever we do on this. Do they have a time frame put in there?
Is it 10 years?
That one is 6 years. I guess the local building official permits are over 6 years.
In case the state makes you
close out. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to actually make a motion to change that to 6 years. I think 10 years is unnecessarily long unless you tell
me. I'll make that motion.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay. That's one. And then the next one is on page 89, number 105. 24.1, it's up on the top. It says, dust created during construction or demolition must be contained on site or close proximity to building or structure through wetting down the dust or materials or through the use of alternative means that prevent dust from leaving the property. My little street has had four houses torn down in the last few months.
Right.
And I know no one is wetting them down. I know some of those houses had asbestos. So I would like to understand what through alternate means. Because no one's wetting down those piles.
Well, those are two totally separate.
Well, let's just say that there's a lot of dust and dirt coming. And I would feel better if it was at least wet. And that's not happening. So what is this other alternative that we are authorizing with the statement here, or through the use of any alternate means?
Sorry, that's currently in the ordinance now. You may have a provide your own water supply that comes on site. I mean, that is required today. If you have instances of that, please let us know, and we'll duly enforce that on every demolition project.
Yeah. On my street recently. So, but the issue here is that something we really want to say? Because what is new is not that we need to wet it down. What's new is that we're allowing or through the use of any alternate means. And I just don't know that we really want to open that Pandora's box if we're not defining what those alternative means are.
I haven't seen any better method than wetting it down. But that language is in the current ordinance. It's been there for years.
And why is it underlined?
Or through the only thing we add was, or through the use of, the way it's worded before, it said dust.
It didn't make sense the way it was worded before.
Down the dust or materials. Any alternate means that prevents dust.
It's probably not material.
It was just an editorial clarification.
The requirement.
Okay, I'm just living in the dust right now. So when I saw that, I really was questioning what alternative means we are authorizing.
Right.
What are they? I don't even know what they are. You wet it down or you don't.
You can bring a lot of fans out and some filters.
Yeah.
There's other things you can
do.
It sounds like they're not doing anything in your case.
They're not. And then I have a question of my boundless curiosity. On page 95, it mentions the projected extension of Knowles Avenue to Fairbanks. And I'd just like someone to bring me up to date on that.
It does? Okay. Oh, this is regarding the fire sprinkler requirement boundaries for the central business district. Those are the properties that are generally described as the central business district in which the fire sprinkler requirements have been in effect for many years.
Oh, I think I understand what it means.
Okay.
Projected isn't that we are projecting the extension.
That's where the line
should
goes.
Knowles Avenue continue in that direction, that's where you draw the line.
That's
thank
the line.
You.
Right.
I answered my own question.
Yeah, it is.
Mr. Weldon.
Yes. Let's see. I had the opportunity to go over this with George earlier, and I have one question and then a comment. My question, George, is having seen these books in the past over several years, I was wondering how your eyesight is.
Well, I personally don't ever use the hard copy anymore. Long since used,
I'm amazed
we
still
download. Zoom to 200. That's
we download them. So,
and the comment is that I just want to thank you for the work you do to keep this all under control. It's the measure of it is how little we hear from the contractors complaining.
Yeah.
And how solid the results are in terms of the construction. And the application of the code, certainly the codes have improved things like fire safety dramatically over the years, but the application of the codes is the realization of that safety.
Right.
So I just wanted to thank you.
Okay. We have no motion on the table except for...
One other comment? I'm okay. Commissioner Weldon, you had asked me to look at this provision here on this regarding the reference to an alternate language referring to demolition waiting period.
Yeah, what page was that?
On pages, 7 and 8 of the ordinance, which is on page
89 of the agenda packet, page 7 of the ordinance. And so in reference to our conversation, I did come up with an alternate language if you're interested in adopting that alternate. It's kind of editorially a change here. Patrick, are you able to scan back or zoom back on that to see the whole page?
George, sometimes I offer applicants the opportunity, yeah, if they look like they're going to a vote, to not offer any amendments, but yeah, I'll do that to you. If you want to throw a hiccup in here, you're more than welcome.
Now, we can leave this alone if you think it's fine, but Commissioner Weldon had a long conversation with me about...
I was just trying to make sure that it was clear, having reread the historic code that we have, I was just trying to make sure it was absolutely clear that the number of days involved for these properties was not up to questioning under this language,
right,
and that the language, yeah, in our, you know, historic code would rule. And and if you feel that it's okay the way it is, I'm not in the business of rewriting.
That's fine.
Your work.
We can just ditch this alternate in.
That's fine. Thank you for indulging me.
Okay.
Then let's do this, folks. I'm going to take, and Commissioner Cooper has agreed that we will take her motion as a main motion with the amendment built into that the 10 years is to 6 years in section 105.4.1.8. And as a seconder of that motion, I agreed as well. So that is the motion. It is a motion to approve the entire document with that slight amendment. Okay, with that, we'll open the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item, please, now's your time. Ms. Fletcher, welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Lurleen Fletcher, and I live at 811 English Court. And I just wanted to ask the question of what Springer just asked about the time and construction. Was that the time in the construction when it start and when it end from 8 to 5?
It's actually from 7 a.m. is what time construction can start. That really dealt with when demolition can take
place. Okay, I just want to make sure that I heard that right. Yeah, because I have something going on over at my house.
But that's not how it's presented.
Yeah, some construction going over by my house, and before the sun come up, it still be dark, and it be later than 7 when they start, and I just want to make sure.
Thank you. Anyone else? No, we'll close the floor to public comment. Commissioner Sprinkle.
Well, here's my issue with this, okay? When I read this, I didn't go back to the original packet. I read everything you gave me, which is 105.4.1, which doesn't imply that it's demolition. And so when I look at the four items, and one of them is limitation of noise, it's clearly 8 to 5. One is limitation of site cleanliness, and then limitation of work hours, which is clearly 8 to 5. How am I supposed to know that's demolition when what it says is in constructing, renovating, or building a new one- or two-family dwelling?
Okay, this is in a different section in a demolition. This is
Here's my deal. How do I know that? Because it follows it. I'm reading what you've given me. So what I'm looking at is the reference to what I've looked at, which was 8 to 5, refers back to 105.4. Is that
different? You looking on page 4, page 86 of the agenda?
Yes.
Packet? If you go back to the previous page, which is, you'll see that it's 105, it's a 0.4.1. It's, this whole paragraph has to do with the limitations on constructing a one- and two-family dwelling and with the limitation of 12 months unless you get extensions. So that's the first paragraph. Then it leads into details about the validity of the permit and that type of information. And then it goes into the standard criteria that may be applied when extending or reinstating an expired permit. So this has nothing to do.
It has nothing to do with the original permit.
But it says when preparing a construction management plan.
Or when preparing a construction management plan.
So that's at the beginning.
Right. So what we have seen throughout our neighborhoods is where there's a lot of teardowns and folks that have delayed and performing their construction and created a nuisance in the neighborhood. They come forward and need to reinstate or extend their permit. So this is criteria that we created over the last, I don't know, 3 to 6 years, maybe longer, that allows us to put further limitations on that construction job that is bothering the neighbor next door. They're working, you know, long hours, and so that's what points 1, 2, 3, 4, and number 3 is a limitation of work hours, because this project has gone so long, and they're up. You know,
okay,
they're working,
so
that's what that's about.
I would just suggest that you don't change the hours from one place to another, because if there's 7 to 5 everywhere, there's nobody out there that knows and understands that you have changed the hours for that person. That's all. It's not a big deal. Don't take it to the wall. Okay. It just doesn't make sense to me to have 7 to 5 one place and 8 to 5 somewhere else.
Okay.
It's 7 to 9, isn't it?
Oh,
yes.
9 p.m.
Yes, it
is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, folks, we have a motion. We have a second on the table. Any further discussion? Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Who's up next?
That's it?
Yeah, we made a city or
Yes, sir. Ordinance number blank S-17, an ordinance of the city of Winter Park, Florida, vacating and abandoning a certain portion of the public right-of-way known as Laurel Road and public utility rights over certain property located within the Charmont subdivision, as more particularly described herein, providing for reservation of a perpetual 20-foot public utility easement, providing for authorization and direction to city staff, providing findings by the city commission, providing for severability, conflict, and an effective date.
Thank you. Mr. Attaway.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So this whole ordinance is basically cleaning up unneeded encumbrances and dedicating needed encumbrances on the property at on Virginia Drive at the corner of Laurel Road. So I'm going to give you this survey to kind of clarify some things. So this is Laurel Road. North is this way. So the lake is here. This is where Laurel Road ends into the lake. Laurel Road was originally platted to turn and follow along the lake shore. And that,
did it go left also or just right?
I think it went left also. I'm not really sure what the story is over here. But a long time ago, that portion of Laurel Road was vacated. And they left this piece of right-of-way because there was some sewer infrastructure there, and when they vacated this right-of-way, as we do sometimes, we retained a utility and access easement over that entire vacated right-of-way. Now, the sewer has changed since that time, and the new lift station has been rebuilt here. And so the really the only utility that's there is a sanitary line that runs across and goes into this lift station. And so there isn't a need for this encumbrance of right-of-way to be there, and there really isn't a need for 60 feet of utility easement to be there. Our requirement is 20 feet, a 20-foot utility easement centered on the pipe. So basically, this ordinance is doing several things. It is vacating this as right-of-way. It is vacating all of the 60 feet as utility easement, and then it's granting the needed 20-foot utility easement over the pipe. So the pipe was physically located in the field and measured out 10 feet on each side and defined that in surveying terms. And so that's what you have in your package. It's a little convoluted, but that's
okay.
That's what's happening.
Mr. Seidel.
Troy, how deep is the pipe? And if you ever had to get to it, would you just bore under there, or would you actually dig it up?
Well, it's gravity line, so you really can't bore that. It would be dug up. If they needed to use a trench box, they'd use a trench box. I'm not exactly sure that the depth. Do you know, Jason?
Yeah, I guess just, you know, from my experience that, you know, digging a hole down 15 feet, you'd like to have a wider area than 20 feet. Otherwise, you're going to get into more expensive construction. And right now we have an easement that's, you know, quite wide. Is there any way we can have the easement a little wider so that if on the one side so we can get down that 15 without having to do expensive construction techniques in the future if we had to?
Well, what do you think?
Say like a 25 foot? I mean, you tell me, Jason, if you needed to dig on it.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions for staff? Okay. We'll look for a motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Okay. We'll open up the floor to public comment in order to address this item. Now is your time. Okay, seeing none, close the floor to public comment. Further discussion? Commission? Okay. Cindy, please read the roll.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Wellman?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Seidel, commission reports.
I had two items I just wanted to bring up. One, and I know I was at the Fire Department Awards last Friday, and you know, hearing all the things that the fire department has done this year, I just realized how blessed we are to have them and to live in this community with them close by. They went through a lot this year on their own, but, you know, they still understand that it's, you know, it's all about the people themselves and ourselves, and I really appreciate the camaraderie that I heard that night, and I can tell you the chief did a great job, and when he retires, he's going to be missed. So
he became a grandfather yesterday.
Is that his
first?
Wow.
Yes.
That was like
very timely.
Wow.
Yeah. And so actually, I had two more items. So I have three items. I wanted to bring up something because we had met with the Spectrum folks and something that personally happened to me. And I don't know if legally you can do this, and it surprised me. But someone hacked my credit card, and so I got my credit card number changed. And the next Verizon bill I got, or I'm sorry, Spectrum bill I got, they're both in the same boat. it charged me a late fee for not paying my fee that I pay ahead of time. So my services went through December 19th, but my bill was dated December 15th with a late fee on it. And I'm like, how can it be late when I haven't received the service yet? Is that legal? And that's my question for you, because they're doing it in our city to our people. So I told them, I'm going to ask my city manager and attorney about that, because that doesn't seem legal to charge a late fee for something you haven't given me yet.
I think it depends upon the contract.
Yeah, you got to look at your contract.
Do we have any control over their contracts within the
Spectrum?
City? Don't they have to get a
pole attachment agreement.
Having argued with Spectrum myself personally in the past, Greg, I find that it does take about a half an hour getting to the right person.
And, yes,
but
does it pay off?
But once you do, you'll get favorable action. Okay.
Well, I asked the person on the phone. I said, "Do you pay for your water before you get your water?" No, you pay for it afterwards. I haven't even got the service yet, and you're charging me late fee.
So I think the commissioner's asking questions. Is there anything that we can do?
Is there anything illegal about
it? Make sure that we protect our citizens from certain things. And I think the answer would be, and I'm going to start with the city attorney, but the contract is the contract, right, sir?
Like to see it, and it would be. I'm happy either to craft a letter for the city manager if the commission sees fit, or I'll send a letter.
Well, if that's the case, I have a number of other things that Spectrum
it's up to you guys.
No.
Has claimed are my contractual obligations that I'm subject to.
Let's make sure, to Commissioner's point, because I believe Commissioner Seidel is requesting this on behalf of the residents of Warner Park.
Correct.
Himself.
Right. Correct.
So let's make sure that when we're viewing this, we're keeping that.
Right.
So I'm happy to.
I mean, this is. This, to me, it just seemed like an awkward thing. I talked to the guy on the phone for about a half hour. And he was trying to explain to me that, well, you didn't pay it on time. And what the interesting part was, you guys, is four other credit cards that are on that
credit card account, all transferred to the new one and didn't charge me a late fee. And Spectrum did. So how come the others were able to transfer me and Spectrum didn't?
M-O-N-O.
Take it to right. The city attorney and see if there's city-related issues.
Well, I just wanted to bring that up a little. You know, it was just surprising to me as they were in here telling us how great they were the other day. And then finally, thanks for listening on that one, is, you know, I did make the decision last week not to run for mayor. And so what I ask is I look forward to some open, honest discussion in this campaign, and I look forward to see how it works out. And wish you luck, Mr. Mayor. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I have not taken public comment. We've got about so we can 13 minutes to kill. We
don't
have to use all of them, Commissioner.
We don't. I was trying to.
Get your list longer, Sarah. This could be.
Okay, so I do want us to address the Christmas tree in some form or fashion.
Thank you.
Because we need to. There's just too many people that are distressed with it for one way or the other. I am a big believer in opening our arms and having more trees, not just having one simple tree. So before we put the tree up next year, by the way, when are our lights coming down?
They're coming down this week.
I think it's great to have new things. I think it's great to have something new. But there are people who really miss the old tree.
We have acquired a new tree.
Okay,
it's
going great.
To be planted on January the 19th at 11 a.m.
All right.
Which is the Florida Arbor Day.
And all right. How large is this tree?
It's about this big.
It is.
Drew said
she would take care of it.
It is about 22 feet tall.
Perfect.
Yeah, about 22 feet tall.
That's great. And what is it? We can brag about this tree.
It is some type of cedar.
Red southern cedar.
Beautiful. Coming from a nursery in North Florida.
Beautiful.
We search high and low. This is the most beautiful tree in all of Florida.
People are going to be so.
It's going to be planted just north of Morse Boulevard.
Can we brag about it?
Yes, you may. And you're all going to be invited to the planting ceremony. And it's.
Are you going to make Stig the entire?
Bring your own shovel.
Let me just throw this in too. I know that we have received complaints about the existing LED tree, which. I appreciate it. Everybody's got an opinion, and you all know I've made it public before. It's not my favorite tree. However, there are a number of people in the city who like the tree. There are young families who love the tree. There are kids who go out there every night and watch the tree. So let's be a little bit more respectful of some of the people that do like that tree as well, because I think we are hopefully an inclusive city, and we can all appreciate other people's tastes. So while I'm happy to have a secondary tree, I mean, let's not forget there are people who like the LED tree, too.
And that's why I said let's have open our arms and have more trees. Okay.
Are we going to move the LED tree, or is it going to stay there?
I don't know yet.
Let's wait.
That's not till next year. Okay. I have two more things. Okay. The other one is that as commissioners, we all have served in different roles for different committees, and I serve on the Orange County Task Force that looks at. I meet twice a month on that, and I just want us at one of your meetings to look at. The other roles that we take on is sitting up here as city commissioners, because I do that as well as sit on the library board, and I am a big believer in sharing the wealth. And so if, in fact, there's other people that want to change some of those or look at that.
We did this a little while ago. I think we took note of
I know
the
we did.
That we were on. Can
right.
we revisit that, and then we can certainly look for different appointments. I know Commissioner.
I appreciate all the work you guys do.
Us on the Board of League of Cities for years.
Yes.
And I'm on the board there.
And I know that, and I understand that, but I just think we need to keep in mind, because I just got my thank you note from Teresa Jacobs for serving 3 years, and I thought somebody else up here might be anxious to start doing that. So All right. One more. Okay. Most of you all know that I have not been a big fan of all the signs that we have in our town, and part of that is because I still am not really clear on how we get a sign in our town, who gets to put it up, and where it goes, and when it goes there. And I was just surprised the other day when I saw a new I-4 sign that just came up on the north end, on the south end of Park Avenue. So I know that we're working on signs, and there's something that's posted right now on our website about signs, and I think we're going to discuss it on the 22nd, okay? And I'm all in favor of discussing it. But here's the bigger problem. Right now, that's on the website, as well as I've probably got five different people sending me emails about things that are not on our, they're not on our agenda, but they're hearing about them from somewhere. Well, one of them was Orange County, and one of them was pulled off our agenda. So things are not as clear sometimes when they're on the website that we're not even dealing with it. So I just want us to get on the same page there. And then when it comes to the sign thing, I don't know, I'm not trying to create an issue, but I think we have to discuss it before we get into anything else, and I don't know how other people feel about it. So I'm just bringing it up here to say that I'm not trying to create the Third World War, but I do want us to talk about the science, because we have been talking about it for a while.
So can I interject? Regarding the website and who sees what first, I think it's, if there's something that is going to be posted on the website, Clarissa, if we can, if you wouldn't, and I know you guys send us numerous emails and we appreciate that, just let us know if there's something that's being posted that before it gets posted or as it's being posted, because I get the same requests, people talking to me about the sign ordinance that I knew was scheduled to come before us, but I hadn't even seen it yet, and they were already into it, talking to me about the details of the sign ordinance, so, and I hadn't even known it was posted on the website. So that's just a challenge for us when we're just pre-
Same thing's true of notices.
Yeah.
That go out in the mail, and I get phone calls once in a while,
yeah.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
And regarding the sign ordinance itself, who's running that? Is Ari? Dory, can you share with us what stakeholders have been involved in that? Because I think that's kind of the question.
Sure. Well, this certainly goes back a number of years. We did a presentation to you all back in August. Jim White and Jeff did a presentation to you teeing this up. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, it has been through the Park Avenue Merchants Association. We have had a number of in-house meetings about it. We did mail out 2,600 flyers to our commercial businesses so they were aware of the potential changes coming into the sign ordinance, as well as did our notice in the newspaper so that people could get a look at it early. So that has been, so this has been ongoing for a number of years. I certainly know a lot of this was that our sign code goes back 30 plus years.
Right. Sure.
And we also are aware that as a commission, you have had discussions about signs numerous times. So as a reflection of that, we've been teeing this up over the last year to bring this to you in some form or fashion. So that we've talked to the folks that we believe are stakeholders. We also through
since this iteration of it?
Through this, yes. And that was the reason for the postcards, was to let people know that it was coming forward. And we have talked to the Park Avenue Merchants Association about it as well. I don't know, and I apologize for not knowing this, whether code compliance and planning have had a community meeting on it. I believe we did have a workshop on it, and I don't believe we had much in the way of attendance, but I'll double back on that one.
Okay, so is it, we have gotten some questions. I don't mind seeing a draft of it, but I'd certainly like to make sure that all the stakeholders, we have the chamber president sitting right next to you, and perhaps we can get it to the chamber before it comes to us to at least review and
it's been through the Park Avenue Merchants Association.
It's different than the chamber, though.
Yes, there's concern beyond the merchants office.
We are
So can I ask for three nods or two nods to ask staff to just take this to the Merchants Association and maybe have any other meeting?
Are we going to do like historical preservation light on this one?
We have been to the Merchants Association already. Apparently it's the chamber group that has
yeah.
it.
Have a couple meetings, find out what the concerns are, see if we can address the concerns.
Mind. To me, the stakeholders certainly include mm-hmm. the community at large.
Right.
So for me, there's more than just talking about.
So Commissioner, why don't we do
I
this?
I do think
here's
it's
my
important
ask.
That we take the time, whatever amount of time mm-hmm. it takes, to make sure people are heard.
Here's my ask, and I'll look for two nods on this. Would you mind, staff, getting with the chamber and scheduling some type of public meeting, and please invite the public to that meeting, which whatever way you have to, whether it's on the website or whatever. But open the discussion up so that the chamber's thoughts can be heard, but also residents can also weigh in and be part of the discussion, or at least attend.
Yes.
Thank you. I'll ask for two on that.
Yes.
I think it's important. Okay.
Yeah.
It's clumsy.
Yeah,
it's
Mayor, if I could, I'd like to ask for a little kind of modification on that. Is more of, it would be nice if we had a kind of public information plan to know, okay, here's where we are with the ordinance, and then here's what we think we need to do to make sure everybody gets their two cents in, not just the chamber, but is there anything we forgot?
So in defense of staff, I'll say that's what literally the first reading of these things is for us, to come present and have the discussion.
Well,
but
yeah,
I think in this
a lot
case,
of people think that the first reading is said and done by the time we get to the first reading. That's what I hear from a lot of constituents.
That's
and,
also that there's people and, who are...
That is
right.
It doesn't prove to be true, though, does
no,
it?
No,
not always. Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
Okay.
Thank you. That was it.
Slowly. Excellent. Never bad.
Yes,
I have a few. I continue to hear about the light on the corner of Morrison, New York, and I know you took it down, mm-hmm. but given that those are multiple lanes coming together there at the Woman's Club, and I appreciate the demographics, you know, but I have, well, no, it's
Morrison, New York,
70% of our population, actually. And so for me, people are concerned, and they're telling me they're concerned about that intersection. So I just want to go on record to let everyone know that I'm still hearing that there's a concern about trying to make a four-way stop on a street that has multiple lanes.
It only has multiple lanes coming from one direction.
Right.
But I mean,
well, we'll see how it works.
It seems to be working fine.
And we just need to see how that works, but keep an eye on it because there has been a lot of expressed concern. The electronic Christmas tree, yes, I also was getting a lot of input on the electronic Christmas tree. I'm delighted about the new tree. That's wonderful. A red southern cedar. I brought the resolutions for the CRA support and also for the home rule. If we could maybe look at seeing if those are close to what you need. And the last thing is about the finance committee. As I was looking through the debt codes and our budget, I know a lot of cities have a budget finance committee, much like we have an arts board, much like we have a sustainability board. And I know we have a lot of retired bank presidents in Winter Park. We have a lot of knowledge that we could draw on. And I'd like us just to think about it. I'm not even looking for an answer today, but I'd like for us to think about the possibility of using some of those assets that we have in the community to help make us stronger. And I did get the community meeting notice from Orange County about the racetrack gas station that's going in directly behind Golfside and Baldwin Park. And they've corrected it. Before they were saying that it was on the east side, so I called them and said, this has got bad information on it. So they sent out a new notice telling people exactly where it is, but I just wanted you all to be aware. I'm getting phone calls asking for support. I know they don't come to us and ask our opinion, do they, Dory, with things like this? Okay. So if residents are interested, they just need to go, and they need to contact their Orange County commissioners.
That's what I told them.
Yeah, I think that's all I have. And the most important thing to me is the Finance Advisory Committee. I'd like to see us consider that.
Mr. Weldon.
Speaking of finances, the only thing I have is a curiosity question that I asked Randy just to try to get a handle on the global financial picture. That includes all of the property taxes that are paid by property owners in Winter Park to the school board, the county, and the city. And as far as the county is concerned, we pay them as taxpayers in Winter Park more than we pay into the city of Winter Park. And the obvious question is, well, what do we get for that?
We get a community.
How much do we control of it?
Well, I understand.
We get to vote.
I understand.
Well, we get the CRA.
I understand that it's a difficult issue in some respects, but I think you know, the one thing we have is the opportunity to speak. And, you know, the county takes $23 million of our money every year, and they give us a jail system, supervisor of elections, county property appraiser's office, it's kind of a self-serving deal, county tax collector's office, same thing, animal control, which in some cases has been very helpful, mosquito control, the county emergency operations center, which we basically have our own, health department, I don't know what they do for the city specifically, maybe there are some valuable things.
Inspect the restaurants, that type of thing.
They inspect the restaurants? Mm-hmm. That's
they also help a lot of people, the health department does.
Yeah.
That are residents.
In the city?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I'm sure there's some things that they do. I mean, you know, it's obviously not a totally a one-way street.
So how much do we pay in to the county?
$23 million in property taxes a year.
And what do we get back on the CRA?
A million?
Two million.
So it's negligible compared to.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about it in the context of looking forward, what are the things that we might legitimately start asking the county for, given our contributions to the county coffers. And the one obvious thing that came to mind was perhaps working with Maitland, starting in the near future, talking with the county about the county funding the funding source, better known as another tax, for commuter rail in a few years. So I just thought I'd bring that up publicly and see if I get any interest in terms of trying to talk with the county about the fact that the city of Winter Park's valuation subsidizes a lot of stuff in the county.
You've got my head nod on that one.
Yeah. And that there might be some things that we should be vocal about. And that one obvious one is working with Maitland.
It's a good time to start that.
On a funding source for commuter rail and maybe taking a position on it as a commission. So that's the only thing I wanted to broach, and obviously that's for thought at this point.
I have a question about that. Yeah. I know we got a cap on the basic O&M.
$350,000.
But on the liability, did we get a $700,000 cap on the liability? Or what?
I think it's another $350,000, right? Another $350,000.
$350,000 on the liability?
Yeah.
That sure improved. It was $350,000 on the liability, $650,000 on the liability, $350,000 on O&M.
I think it's
that changed. Okay, that'd be great if you might have been able to do that. That'd be good.
Well, the final negotiations on that were quite good, actually.
But Orange County pays, right? Orange County pays. So we're already paying for that through Orange County, and we're paying for it through Winter Park.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, we need to do that. We need to go to Orange County about that.
Well, anyway, that's all I've got. And maybe we can talk about it further if somebody wants to talk about it further.
Could we have one more head nod so we could actually make that an official item for us to deal with? No, you don't want to mess with SunRail?
No, it's not.
I'm almost done. It's okay.
I don't mind having a discussion as part of a bigger discussion regards to the $23 million, what we do with it. I don't want to specifically focus on the SunRail. I think it's just not known enough yet.
Okay.
But I'm happy to have another discussion about how to access.
Well, I just want to, to bring it to
how to pull more dollars back into Winter Park.
Our joint attention. And another possible avenue there that struck me after looking at the community parks that we have and our utilization is that the county really doesn't hold its fair share at all in terms of providing playing fields for the population. And, I think we can, clearly demonstrate that based upon the facts and maybe make some points downtown and at the county about, hey, we'd like to see a little more investment in parks and so forth.
If you decide to serve on that committee I'm on now, you can go down there twice a month and sit in the committee chair.
I think that's what I heard. From the statement.
I'm looking for, general interest on the part of the commission along those lines. If there isn't general interest along those lines, then nothing happens.
Here, I would have a general interest in them sharing park maintenance with our parks because a lot of the Orange County people use our parks, right?
Yeah, but that goes both ways. We can have a little private talk, not private, but a public talk about.
Okay, we're running down.
We're good.
5:05. Except to say. It's nice to see UCF here. We are part of a bigger region.
That was an exciting game.
And they are great partners, as are so many people that are outside of our geographic borders. So I'm just thankful we do have great citizens of Winter Park who
leverage some of our partnerships that are, again, not within our geographic borders. We will open the floor to public comment in a motion to address the commission on anything that has not been on the agenda tonight. If you'd like, we are certainly here for as long as you like. No? Okay. The folks, we are adjourned. Thank you.